cocaine to be on this podcast?
What's up, everybody? You're listening to yet another edition of Cocaine Willie. I'm your commissioner, Bob Trollsby, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, my trusty sidekicks, the good chef, Andre Napier, and fireball, Matt Marchesini. Gentlemen, the season's over. It's done. It's all gone. We already had our candlelight vigil for the men's basketball team. The women's basketball team went on to win in their first round and then lose in the second round, a hard-fought, contested matchup against Colorado Buffaloes on the women's side. And we will not be having the fourth iteration of K-State versus Iowa, K-State versus Caitlin Clark in the last 2 years, unfortunately. But tonight we're going to be recapping, reflecting, cherishing the men's football season, the men's basketball season, and the women's basketball season for 2023 and 2024. And we have some listener questions that we're going to be answering, but how are we doing tonight? How are we doing tonight?
Man, long time no talk, man. What's going on, baby? It's been all good. I mean, we're losers, but
we've
been doing a lot of losing lately, but we're still hanging in there tough.
Chef, don't talk about yourself like that. Don't talk about yourself like that.
I know. I need.
You're not a loser.
I need words of encouragement. Come on, bring them to me.
Look at that smiling face you have.
Matt's so handsome.
I mean, Chef, if you need some words of encouragement, didn't you in your rec league basketball this year average what Day-Day Ames averaged this year as far as
he averaged
rebounds? What, like 6-4 per game?
I was a solid 5-3. I was a solid 5-3. You know, I shot well above 48% from three-point range. I just, you know, my layup skills, not where it needs to be. Free throw around 68%. Well, probably, I didn't shoot that many, so probably around like 65.
I have 69. To do the math on that. You averaged 4.7 a game. You were the third leading scorer on the team.
4.7. That's tough.
How many fucking points are you scoring, your team scoring a game? 20? Like,
No. We have some true ballers. I am, you know, we went out. We're the rec league is over, but we went out in the second round of the playoffs. Unfortunately, you know, we had some ballers on our team. Victor Lash. Shout out to Victor Lash, City 2 at the post office. If he's watching this, you're a true baller. You're my boy.
Victor Lash averaged 17.8 a game. That's pretty impressive effort by Victor Lash.
Our free agent signing, Raekwon, shoots it crazy range. I mean, insane range. Reminds me of Trey Young, but in the frame of a 6'3 slasher.
He averaged 12 a game.
But you know, it was a bad 12 because he literally dropped 25, the max you can have, I think, in the first game. It's clutch.
You're capped at 25 points per game?
Yeah. You can't do in the C League, what? You can't go over 25. As a player, if you go over 25, I think they dock you. I'm not sure exactly.
Wait, Victor Lash is like the actual name of a person, not a fake person that you're trying to tell us is good.
No, this is a real person on his stat sheet, Matt.
Victor Lash?
City 2 in Grove City, Ohio. He's a mail carrier. I'm sure he wants this information out there.
Wait, is this team just full of mail carriers?
Yeah. Well, they're Raekwon, obviously. Well, I shouldn't say obviously, but he is not a mail carrier. And one other person, what was his name? Brandon Davis. Shout out to BD, an absolute assassin from the three-point range as well. Undersized point guard, can't handle the ball, but you know, if you get him a wide open set shot, he's like me, it's gonna go down every time. He's not a mail carry, but everybody else, we were kind of tough. The shot callers, we were kind of tough.
So who are you going after in the portal this offseason?
Oh, the problem is I don't know if I'm going to be invited back on the team. So I might be in the portal.
You're the third leading scorer, and you're not getting
Chef, Chef is exactly like Cam Carter. Am I right? Like, third leading scorer. We're trying to find a better replacement in the portal.
Yes. And I kind of got removed from the team. You know, that
you're the cap casualty.
It's kind of a long story. I don't know if you guys want to get into this, but me and Victor Lash, my boy, but we are two different kind of people out on the basketball court. You know, aggressive minds get together, and when we don't see eye to eye, I had to take myself out of the situation. I bailed in the second half of the last playoff game. Not good, not a good look for me, but we did lose that game. Once the other team brought the 2-3 zone out, you know, people did not see eye to eye on how we should attack it.
Couldn't make adjustments against the zone like Bill Self.
Yeah, I called myself the coach, and when the players out there don't listen to what the coach has to say, you kind of have to remove yourself from the situation and let them figure it out on their own. And the casualty of war was that we took an L.
Bruce Weber, look at this, Bruce Weber.
I was screaming Barry at the top of my lungs.
Barry!
But I am a solid. If I do get invited, it'll probably be for B, and I will come off the for B League, and I'll be coming off the bench, which is fine. I'm okay with that.
Sixth man.
Yeah, I'll probably be the seventh or eighth man. But you know, 5 or 6 minutes a game. You know, set corner shot, get my one shot up a game, and probably cash it.
You'll be the Serge Ibari Rice of the shot callers.
Exactly.
Hey, Chef, better get good at making that Gatorade, my boy.
We bring our own powder.
Better figure out that Gatorade recipe, my boy.
I'll be over there swirling it, putting it in the cups. Somebody angry comes over and flips the table like, fuck, I just made all that.
Well, similar to last year, our season finale episode, we're going to go through, we're going to grade the season for each respective team. Last year, we just did men's basketball, but this year we're doing women's basketball because we had a lot to talk about. I think we're going to cover women's basketball moving forward, so why not? But let's start with football. They finished 9-4, fourth in the Big 12. Pop-Tart Bowl dub against the NC State Wolfpack. Future Big 12 member, potentially, who knows? We got the 15th straight dub against the Kansas Jayhawks, which is always going to be important in our lexicon. 30-plus point victories against TCU, Houston, and Baylor, all conference opponents. You finish in the top 25. Where do you grade this season? Because when we finished the football season, when we had that Iowa State episode, it felt a lot more like 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the men's basketball team than it probably should have or needed to. But when you have that Pop-Tart Bowl victory, you get the edible mascot, you have the highest rated, most watched bowl game outside of the CFP, I think you get some brownie points. You get some Pop-Tart points, if you will, for doing that. So where do you rate the football season on a high school grading scale of A through an F?
My high school actually graded 0 to 100.
Oh, wow. Were you like a gifted child or?
Well, you didn't have to bring it up, but yes. So let's see, 0 to 100. My grade was a B minus. So that would have been like what? A 82? Low 80s.
Yeah.
80 to 83. I'm going to grade a B minus, and here's my reasoning. I think of the games that we did lose this season, of how close those games were. You know, one good drive away from beating Missouri and one play away from beating Texas and things like that. We obviously were not able to execute. The team was not able to execute in those situations. And that kind of puts us in a kind of a little bit of an average scenario. Yes, you know, the Pop-Tarts Bowl, you know, winning that game, that's great, and kind of seeing, you know, what we think is going to happen for 2024. But for this season, you know, if you just execute in a couple certain kind of situations, you know, this team has the chance to go to Arlington for the Big 12 championship game. And so I mean, I think it was definitely an above average season. I think B minus is pretty fair, with the kind of understanding that next season is going to be hopefully bringing us to the college football playoff. Am I right? What is that?
That was insane. What was that?
I think you did know.
The rock. I think you did the rock sign. No, rock.
Wait, what's rock? Like this?
No, like this. Like party on.
And for those of you who are listening on the podcast feed and not watching the video, when you do hand signs on the camera, for whatever reason, it has like weird backgrounds that show up.
Okay. Well, for me, Matt was at an 82. Like you said, Bob, the 15 straight versus KU is an absolute necessity. That is to get you a passing grade. You have to have the KU dub. Iowa State is the second biggest rivalry we have. Well, you know, Missouri was on there too. That Missouri loss absolutely hurt in the non-con. Can we ever – when's the last time that we went perfect in the non-con? I can't remember. Maybe the Stanford year? No, that was the second year. I don't remember. But, you know, having to get those non-con wins, it would have been nice to have those. Iowa State was an absolute killer. We had so much high expectations for this season as well. We wanted that back-to-back. It didn't go down that way, so you can't have it over a B+. You can't. It wasn't an absolute A. It wasn't an A-. I'm thinking I'm a little higher than Matt is. I'm going to say at 86. So that's a like right over a solid B. So on the verge of a B+. Man, a bowl victory is just—it's just so fun to have those. It just propels you into the next season. And you got to think of it this way: we saw two different quarterbacks going into this season, and the hype train behind Avery kind of was met in that Pop-Tarts Bowl. So that just—it gives you an added layer of excitement going in. For this coming season and for what we had that season where Avery had a 5-touchdown performance in one game. I mean, that is insane. There was so much exciting stuff that happened in this season. I'm going to go with the 86. It was a good season. You can't complain with 9 wins.
I feel like after the Iowa State game, for me, it was like a 78. It was a C. It was a solid C, but it was like, you can maybe get some extra credit points with the bowl game to bring it up a little bit. I think it's like an 83, 84, if I had to put a, you know.
A numerical percentage, based off of New York high school academics.
Numerical percentage, but a B. I think it's a solid B right there in the middle there. Reason being, like, again, when you look at the amount of seasons since Bill Snyder took over where you had 9 wins or more than half of those seasons had 9 wins, more than half. So it's average. It's a little bit above average, because when you look at the lexicon of college football, 9 wins is usually pretty good. It's considered pretty good. So I would say by K-State standards, it was maybe a little bit underperforming compared to what we thought this season would be coming off a Big 12 championship. But when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, I think like a solid B. It's a solid B. We've got a ton of hype, to Chef's point, going into next season. Avery Johnson met those expectations in the bowl game. And statistically, he had a lot of throwaways, which is a good thing. And his completion to attempt ratio doesn't look great, but it's because of those throwaways, which we've talked about, you know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago at this point. But I think it's a solid B. I feel good about the season. I feel great about next season. And I'm very excited about the new Big 12.
Isn't it crazy how, you know, looking at the going into this season that we just had, if we were looking a year ahead before that year started, we were all nervous about this coming year that's about to happen. We were all nervous. We didn't know. And now we're kind of almost at more expectations than we did prior to the season we just had. And we were coming off of a Big 12 championship. So it's crazy how, you know, just the smallest things can lead to expectations being sky high. So, man, the sky's the limit for the program. Where's the bottom of this program at? At this point, where's the bottom at? Because
the COVID year is the bottom, as far as I'm concerned.
And that's a worldwide pandemic. And it's a fluke.
It's a fluke. We decided not to have a COVID party like Matt Campbell did in Ames.
Yeah, so I mean, 8 wins is the floor, and I've always said, why can't we be? Well, I mean, there's probably a million reasons why, but where did Clemson come from before Dabo?
Kind of similar, right? They weren't like a crazy good program by any means.
Okay, that's fair.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, they were consistent. They weren't like, you know, in the ACC, they weren't looked at as, you know, traditional world beaters like a Florida State or Miami. And then all of a sudden you get the right coach that is consistent, that, you know, they're at a different level from, you know, donors and all that stuff than we are. But a consistent winner that can get to the level of a national championship out of nowhere and become a, you know, are they a blue blood? They're a new blue blood. I mean,
They're a blue blood in the same way that UConn's a blue blood right now. They're a new blood.
Right. So I would say for K-State that.
What's that case for, Matt?
I disagree with that. No.
What? Do you think UConn is lesser than or greater than?
No, they're greater. I mean, you think of like a newer blue blood. UConn won the national championship in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, whatever. And they were a very good program.
Yeah.
Clemson kind of – Terry Bowden was their coach, right? And then they hired Dabo.
Dabo.
How the fuck they pronounce that stupid fucking name? I need to stop swearing because my mom told me I need to stop swearing.
Shout out to mom.
But Jim Calhoun had the UConn program in basketball kind of rolling in the 2000s.
Yeah, they were salty bunch.
So I don't necessarily put UConn as like a new blood. Like, they're a blue blood in the college basketball world.
But they didn't win a national title until 1997.
UConn?
Yeah.
Correct. I mean,
but the 90s and the 2000s were kind of UConn's, you know. They were kind of
Clemson. Clemson won how many? One national championship.
Mm-hmm. And what was it, like 80 something? 80.
And then they won.
They won 4 in the 2010s alone.
Okay.
Ooh, UConn?
And UConn's won what, 5 since 97?
Yeah.
So I mean, kind of view them as similar.
Okay. We agree to disagree.
I mean, if Clemson wins one more, they've won the same number of national titles that UConn has won total.
Clemson
has how many national champions?
4 in a decade. 4 in 5 years. 2015. Oh, wait. They have.
No, they got 3. 2. Dabo's got 2.
2. 2. They went to the Natty.
Look at this guy over here. Look at that guy.
Shout out.
The Habs win 1 Stanley Cup, and it's blue blood NHL.
Hey, we've won 3 Stanley Cups. Eat my dick.
Oh, my God.
That's not appropriate. This is a family-friendly pod.
No, it's not.
But the point stands, right? Yeah. Like, I don't know if
K-State will ever get to that level. They'll probably never win a national championship in our lifetime, and that's fine. But to be a consistent winner where you're at the level, especially with the expanded playoff, there is no reason why we aren't on the level of consistently, who knows what the landscape of college football, we could be a consistent top 10 program year in and year out, in my opinion.
I mean, we're never going to be called a blue blood.
No. But to be a winner as if we were that new blue blood, you kind of have to put yourself in position first.
Yeah. I just don't think we'll ever be in the conversation unless you actually win one. I mean, that's true. That's always my thought on it. Like,
reason why we're not one in basketball is correct. We've never won a natty.
Correct. You know, you can be a top 25 program historically in basketball, like K-State. probably in the running for thinking from a historical perspective what we've done, but you've never won a national championship. So you're never going to be in that conversation. Now, the college football playoff, like, maybe the baseline changes a little bit of, okay, if your program consistently makes the playoff, does that change the historical outlook of your program? Maybe, maybe not. But quite frankly, I mean, like, in our recent time frame, if you think like 20 years or whatever, yeah, K-State's probably a top 25 college football program. But I think the terminology of like blue blood, it gets thrown out there and it's a talking point. I mean, I think it's more of a talking point in basketball versus football, but we're not sniffing that conversation unless you win a national championship. That's just kind of how it is. I mean, you can win a Big 12 championship 5 years in a row, but if you don't win a national championship, are you considered a blue blood in the sport? I don't think so. That's kind of Oklahoma, right? Like,
yeah, that's all I was just about to say.
I mean, that's not taking anything of what K-State has done in the past and like sweeping it under the rug or anything like that. I mean, as a program, from a football perspective, at least, I mean, you've won a Big 12 championship twice in the past 10 years. And, you know, that's kind of like the big achievement you would talk about. I mean, you know, winning 10 games and those pieces, like, that's great. does 2024 put you in a position where does one player become this transcendent figure that allows you to talk about, you know, winning a national championship? It's kind of crazy. I mean, I know we're going to talk about Avery Johnson at some point here, but you know, everybody talks about the ceiling of what Avery Johnson can become. He's one player, right? You have to put the pieces around him and be successful. But the fact of the matter is we won 9 games last year and K-State is what, the 5th best team betting wise to make the college football playoff this year. I mean,
I think that has more to do with where we're at. And that's what I was saying with the landscape of college football, because everybody kind of knows where we're at with the Big 2, Big 10, SEC kind of dominating that. And, you know, I don't get into the whole semantics of how much teams are making money and how many playoff spots you get. So if you're a consistent winner in the Big 12, which, you know, shouldn't be that difficult seeing how the teams that are involved are so equally balanced, and we should be able to, if you separate yourself, you should be in the playoff every year, seeing how there is a guaranteed spot. That's where I was going with, like, not necessarily you have to win one, I agree with you, to be considered a blue blood or a new blood, but to be the team that is, you know, Oklahoma, like you said, they won the Big 12 every year. And at a certain point, they just got credit for just dominating our league, even though they didn't win really anything since, I think, the 2000 national championship. And then their other ones were in the 70s. So let's not kid ourselves, because they were dog shit in the 90s too. But once they dominated throughout the 2000s with Bob Stoops, they put themselves at an echelon where if K-State were to rattle off 4 Big 12 championships, not necessarily in a row, but in a span of 5 or 6 years, you're in the playoff every year. And then it's kind of a crapshoot of how the public perceives you, because you're going to go against those SEC teams. You're going to go against those Big 10 teams. And if you're winning those games, it's all about public, you know, perception at this point, because there's really nobody in charge to say who's who and who's the best. They're just anointing teams just because of where they're at in terms of geography. The SEC gets the credit because the best athletes are from the South. Mississippi State gets credit because they recruit those kids. They would say Mississippi State is a better, or Arkansas is a better program in terms of, because of their recruiting acumen. If they put them in the Big 12, they would say they would be favorites, which is dog shit because they're doo-doo. But Kansas State doesn't recruit as well as them. So, you know, you have to say, You know, they're just lowly old K-State. But if you win the Big 12 so many times in a row, they just kind of anoint you. And that's where I'm at with it. We might not ever win a national championship, but we'll put our name on the map if we just constantly go to the playoff, which shouldn't be that hard, but whatever.
I think that's a fair point. It's going to be really interesting to see how that unfolds, but I wouldn't be mad if we become the new Oklahoma in the Big 12. I think it'd be fine.
Yeah, it's anybody's game with the Big 12. I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point, maybe in the offseason, who knows. But, you know, who's the favorite in this conference full of, it's a room full of sevens and eights. There's no dime in there. There's no 10 piece in here. There's no absolutely, who's the hot girl now? Sydney Sweeney's. There's no Sydney Sweeney's in this room, but there's a bunch of Olivia Munns. Shout out to Olivia Munn. Beat those cancer allegations, girl.
She went to Oklahoma, by the way. Coming full circle. Oklahoma alum, Olivia Munn. So when we talk about the men's basketball team, this was a season that was disappointing at best, I would say. I don't know how else to slice it. You finished 19-15, ninth in the Big 12. You have wins against KU, which lost to Gonzaga in the last round. They got shellacked by about 20 points. Baylor, who also lost in the last round to Clemson. Iowa State, who is the lone remaining team that we have defeated that is alive in March Madness. BYU and Texas. And you won against Texas in the Big 12 tournament. It's nice to get a win against a team that's not called TCU in the Big 12 tournament for the first time in however many years. Then you have an NIT loss against Iowa at Iowa because their net ranking was higher. And so they get the home court advantage. So season grade wise, where would you put the men's basketball team this year?
I was wondering who's going to speak first.
I don't know. I don't know where to. I kind of want to see where you're at.
Yeah, there we go. All right. I'm going to go with a D. D for dumb plays every single game. But I do look at this team and I think of the Big 12 in general. And this team was, admittingly, a couple shots away from making the NCAA tournament, if you think about it. Obviously, the TCU game, if they beat TCU at home, that changes a little bit. They beat Texas Tech on the road. You know, here's the thing. The Iowa State game in the Big 12 tournament, we beat Iowa State. I still don't think there's any way we make the NCAA tournament, just based on how things went. We really needed some of those in-season wins to kind of put us in the situation. But I grade this team a D because they were a team that, even though you don't have two players who, albeit, are very important players in your team, this team did not look like they improved during the season. The turnovers were a key talking point throughout the season, and that never improved. I felt that this team didn't have a steadfast leader. Like, you have a leader on your team, kind of similar to what Marquise Noel was last season. I mean, I think of Big 12 teams. Who's in the NCAA tournament right now? Who's the leader for Houston? Jamal Shedd. For Iowa State, who's the leader for Iowa State? Lipsy, right? Like, and they're all at point guard, but it still remains that we did not have a leader on this team. We had good players that, depending on the night, would show and would not. And you put it all together and it just doesn't work out. So, this team, despite losing Naquan Tomlin, should have made the NCAA tournament this year. And they just did not come together as a cohesive team to make that happen, which is disappointing. And the NIT game, I think what's the thing about the NIT was it kind of showed a little bit about probably what we are hoping to see from like Day Day and Buddy Rich, etc. But we also saw kind of a clunker from Kaluma, and you know, it just like it was a game where it seemed like people didn't want to play in it at all. So I don't put any stock into that, but I'm gonna say D. I mean, I just think it was D for disappointing.
D is not a, you know, that's a kind of a spot on grade. I kind of want to grade like on a curve, if you know what I'm saying. Like I kind of want to give them the benefit of where things could have been, because let's say what it is. We were shorthanded this season, dealt a card that we probably shouldn't have been dealt. Bob, I know you'll have plenty of takes on that. Who's at fault? Who's not? We were down one of our best players, and you touched on it, Matt. What could have been? We were so short at just a couple of games this season. Net rating was never really going to be in our favor. So we were a bubble team basically right from the start. So if you grade that we were kind of a bubble team from the beginning, in terms of those expectations, because once we lost Naquan, Quez Glover, I don't know really how he was going to unfold. I think we kind of all just assumed that he was going to be great, but who's really seen him play? Not too many of us. So, but Naquan was a blow to this season. Now, if you grade on the curve of we don't have him and we were a bubble team from the start because the net hates us, was it like a C? I mean, we were kind of right where we were supposed to be. You know, we were picked to be eighth or ninth in, or no, maybe we were picked a little bit higher than that this season coming off the Elite Eight run. I don't remember where we were.
In fifth, right?
Fifth or sixth. Fifth. But with the missing piece, like I said, I think we should be around that 7-8 range. And where did we finish? We finished 10th.
Ninth.
Tied for ninth. I think we're tied for ninth, maybe somewhere in there.
Yep.
I would give this a C minus. I'll give it a C minus. I'll give it a 70 even. That's a C. Oh. That's the lowest C you can have. That's the lowest C you can have.
All right.
So lowest I'm gonna C give it a have. I'm gonna give it a C. The net hated us. I don't know how we're going to schedule from here on out. So the postseason was really going to be in question for us right at the very jump of the season. We didn't blow teams out. We kind of were overtime. We were 7-0 in overtime. How fun was that? That was a talking point that let them announcers talk about us in a positive light instead of focusing on the 17 or 18 turnovers a game that we were averaging. So that's fun.
Yeah, especially when they come against Oral Roberts in Northern Alabama.
I understand that. I understand that. You know, there's a lot of those games, and I think it's funny. I look back on it, like the Oral Roberts game, I think they were missing one of their best players. Northern Alabama, I know for a fact they were missing their best player. The Oklahoma State loss on the road, they were missing Bryce Thompson. He's like a point guard that, I mean, he's been playing there for a million years. He was out. And I was like, oh, this is a dub. They're missing one of their better players. And, you know, that was kind of the curse for us, that if a team was missing one of their best players, Bronny James, not available. I mean, he kind of stinks, but whatever. It just kind of doomed us. I don't know if it was the scouting report, but every time one of those games happened where the best player is missing for the opposing team, we just come out and stink. And I think it's just a symbol of this team in general. It just was not a cohesive unit, like Matt said. It stinks, and it really shed light on the coaching staff. I think that is really the focus that I took from this season. The coaching staff is seriously going to have to upgrade. Tang is going to have to, you know, really put his nose in the books and really figure out what he's doing in game. It hurts to say that because I love Coach Tang and I want him here forever, you know, whatever. I want him here, but the in-game strategy from our coaching staff was just not good enough. And maybe it was because our team was not that good. But we'll never know that. Maybe, and this is my statement going into next year, this is the make or break year. I'd hate to say it for year three or whatever, but it's basketball. It's a turnkey sport in college basketball. You kind of, there's no like building like it is in football where you're having 4 years down the road and show me your team. There's no development. It is, you got to hit the transfer portal and you got to pick the right guys. And then when you get your guys, you have to coach them right. So if he's not coaching the right year three with these transfers that he picks, that he's got the NIL, all that shit settled. Maybe Linton stays in his own lane. I don't know. But if he does, you have no excuse, Coach Tank. No excuse. And I want dubs. That's just the simple truth of it.
I think I agree with you. I think year three, like, again, we've seen this guy take a team with 2 roster scholarship athletes, get everybody else from the portal in high school and rebuild it from scratch, take them to the Elite Eight and come, you know, a couple of offensive rebounds away from a Final Four appearance in year one. Granted, you're getting a guy who was potentially on his deathbed because of a cardiac incident and was a liability that a lot of teams weren't able to take a risk on in the transfer portal. And you get a once in a generation athlete in Marquise Noel, who, again, a lot of people weren't able to or willing to take the risk on because of his height. And you get those 2 generational athletes playing for K-State at the same time. You roll the dice. It ends up working out. Great. Awesome. This season, you get some adversity. You're still a bubble team. And I will say, if this adversity had happened during the Bruce Weber era, there's no way that team is even a bubble team, I don't think. So credit to Tang for keeping this team, giving them the fight for them to continue to be relevant and get some big wins, get some important wins to stay in the conversation. But this year is going to be incredibly important because assuming there's no presidential interference, assuming there's no crazy shit that happens and shit doesn't hit the fan, you're going to have a roster and a team that you've assembled, and you're taking into account the team that you have in place today, which I don't know. We only have 2 guys in the portal, Cam Carter, Dorian Finister. So it's going to be really interesting to see what he's building around. Who does he get in the portal? Who does he prioritize positionally? So it's just going to be, fascinating. If I'm going back to grades real quick, my grade is probably a D+, because if you view the bubble as passing, and if you're on the right side of the bubble as a C, the C is a passing grade, first round exit, whatever, final or first 4 exit, like that's still a passing grade because you made the tournament. I think being on the wrong side of the bubble means that you are a failing grade, and by having a failing grade but still making the NIT, what, D+, I don't know, like a 69%.
That's very nice. That's sound logic. That's sound
logic. Or is that an F?
No, that's not an F. That's a D+.
That's not an F.
I think it's an F at my school that I went to.
Yeah, well, rainbow parties, right?
The high school I went to, you might be summa cum laude or whatever, like valedictorian.
I was summa cum laude for about a year, and then I fucked that.
Stop.
Okay, Matt, I want to ask you something because I want to get your take on what we were just talking about with, you know, the future of Tang and how year three is kind of the most important one that we're going to see from him. Okay. We had Oklahoma and Texas in the conference. They're dipping. We're bringing in fucking absolute missiles to the conference. It ain't getting no fucking easier. Arizona's a 2 seed fucking.
Arizona State is the dud of the 4 teams, and they were in the tournament 2 years ago when we were in the tournament.
I thought Utah was going to be the absolute dog shit, but
I thought Utah was going to be on the right side of the bubble because they were ranked like 46th in the net this year. And then Colorado makes the second round. They should have beaten Marquette, and Arizona's in the Sweet 16.
So, I mean, just tell me how – I mean, we get what happened this year. We just explained all of it, but tell me how I'm supposed to, where are we ranking? What is Tank going to do to get us over the hump with the conference even just getting even harder?
I mean, if I knew the answer, he'd be calling me up and hiring me, right? I think he should. I think he should too. A couple changes that I think are going to be made. Number one, outside the recruiting space, the non-conference schedule is going to be absolute arse next year. Because I think some of the changes that are going to occur are going to be plainly based off of the net, which whether the net is an agreeable like ranking of teams or not, there's going to be some changes with how the non-conference schedule is going to be constructed. So we're going to play LSU at home, and I think we have Wichita State in Wichita, and I don't know. I just think the schedule is not going to be that great. I doubt that we're going to have a game in Kansas City next year. Going to try and kind of centralize everything at home. The second piece obviously is going to be the recruiting piece. The one thing that I'm a pretty avid follower of K-State Online, shout out to everybody over there. But the transfer thread is a hodgepodge of people who are so optimistic that we are going to land a good number of these people that we are talking to. And there's not enough of the understanding that every person, every player that goes in the transfer portal, technically you're competing against 300 and however the many other schools in college basketball to get that player services to come to your school.
I'd push back a little bit on that because I don't think you're competing with the bottom 200.
I agree. You're
competing with the power six.
I understand that I'm being farcical in this thing, but I'm stating that you're competing against all these other schools for these players, and the NIL movement, like there's a handful of schools that have done a really great job in the NCAA tournament and who made the NCAA tournament this year that plainly ran through the transfer portal and was successful. If Jerome Tang believes that he has a team that's going to make the NCAA tournament, it's my computer, calm down. If Jerome Tang is going to put together a roster that's going to make the NCAA, oh my God, I'm so popular. if Jerome Tang thinks he's going to make the NCAA tournament next season, he's going to have to land a pretty good number of, not number, but from a talent perspective, transfers that are being talked about, whether it's Doug McDaniel, Amari Williams, guards, and then getting a big guy in the portal. I mean, the Big 12 next season is a tougher conference next season than it is this season. And I don't necessarily feel optimistic that we are in the best position right now to make the NCAA tournament. And this is late March, where we don't know what the construction of our roster is going to look like. That is not a knock on a guy like Dede or, David Castillo, who's coming in, but you have to construct this roster knowing that the transfer portal is your key piece here. And none of us can talk about what that's going to look like. I don't know. I mean, Arizona's going to come in. They're going to be good. Colorado, they're going to lose some people. Colorado will be one that will probably kind of hit a little bit. But, I don't know. I don't feel like this team is ready to make is in the right spot to make the tournament this season or this upcoming season unless they find upgrades at a good chunk of these positions. So we'll see.
The I think you're right on the money. The problem is with the transfer portal, the targets that we're going after, it's not none of our business, but like we kind of want to know what the strategy is for going into a season. What are we running? What kind of team do we want to build? What are we looking at? Because if you look at the targets and who we're visiting right now in the transfer portal, I know it's still early, but if we land one or two of those, you know, almost half our roster is going to be under 6 foot one, which is, I don't know if that's a recipe for winning, but it's going to be tough. So I just don't know what kind of team we're trying to put together. It's going to be awfully small if the targets that we're talking about are inserted. So, and it's not getting any easier, like you said, and like I had asked, because I'm nervous because, you know, Tang, from the very start of the season, after the off season, and, you know, we finally kind of got a picture of what the net was looking like and we were, you know, destined to be a bubble team. He was just pleading that 9 wins was going to get you in the NCAA tournament, and in conference, 9 wins is going to get you in the NCAA tournament. So you have a 16 team conference, and I would imagine, I think we're doing a 20 team, you know, 20 game conference slate. I think that's how it's working. So the non-con's going to be smaller, and it's going to be 20. So you're going to play everybody, I'd imagine. And if you're playing everybody, dude, I don't know how you can get into the NCAA tournament if you're losing. Let's just say you win 9 games. That's still 9 games. That's crazy. I just don't know how it happens. 9 games and you have – Fudge muffins. Was that 11 losses in conference? It's going to be the same thing over and over again. You have to be one of these dominant teams in the league, or you have to skew the net. And I just don't know if this staff is up for it. I just don't know. It's nerve wracking.
We're going to play some real crap teams in the non-conference. And that basically the understanding I think that it's going to be moving forward is, you're going to beat the crap out of these teams. Like, you have to kind of pull the Iowa State methodology on this one.
The TJ Otzelberger blitzkrieg.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing with TJ Otzelberger is he has a talented team that went along with it. And we're just not there. Like, we don't have. Right. And that's like, it could change. Right. Like,
yeah. That's what I was going to ask you.
3 months from now, the conversation could skew.
Yeah.
If you're able to land some of these transfers that are being talked about, but the optimism is so high that we have the capability. I mean, we're going to be landing all these players. And we saw last season that we were in the conversation with some, you know, you're in your final three with some, but it doesn't end up working in that direction. And what the important piece, I think, not just from, I'm sure, the coaching staff perspective, but from as a fan and follower, is it's going to be important to land a name early to provide a little bit of a, like, just a positivity piece of going into 2024 season. We've landed this guy from this school, and this is how we think he's going to fit in there, and put a little bit of a spark into it, versus you. It's a little bit later. You're missing on some of these guys and you're kind of like waiting and you're waiting.
That's what I had said last year. You know, even the year before that, when we were looking for 10 guys to fill the roster, is, you know, he came right out and said it, that, you know, the best players aren't even in the portal yet. And we're recruiting those guys, but we're not landing any of them. And then our fallback is we're waiting for the guys that are about to come in. You know, I don't like that strategy, because we see how it is. You wait long enough and then you're just picking up scraps. And you can say that it was the guys that you want, but realistically, look where it got us for this year. But I also wanted to mention, with the scheduling aspect, do we think, because prior to this year, I'd never heard the term gaming the net. That was just not something that we heard. So are we sure that if we do the scheduling where we're trying to beat the hell out of teams, that the committee looks back and says, you know, last year everybody was gaming the net. So now we're kind of looking at a different strategy this year, and we're just behind the eight ball again. And then we, you know, it's just an internal prison that I just put myself into, thinking that the staff is, you know, a day late and a dollar short on strategy, in terms of, you know, now we're going to game the net, but gaming the net doesn't count for anything for this coming season.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know how that's going to shake out. It's going to be fascinating. I really hope that we can game the net, though. I really hope that we play Central Arkansas and 10 teams like Central Arkansas and just beat them by like 30 points every time, 40 points every time. Do the Altzelberger blitzkrieg. But yeah, I hope that's what happens. But next year is going to be a very, very, very important year for Tang. It's going to be an incredibly important offseason, and we'll take a couple weeks off, but we're all going to be paying very, very close attention to the transfer portal. You will have our immediate thoughts on things as they develop for the men's basketball team in the portal. But let's move on to the women's team, and then we're going to call it a night, and then we'll do a separate listener questions episode. Women's basketball finished 26-8. They were third in the Big 12 behind Oklahoma and Texas. They lost to UT in the Big 12 tournament, but they beat Portland in round one of the NCAA tournament. And then they lost in what was mostly a close matchup. The final score isn't quite indicative of how that game really, really went at a sold-out Bramlage Coliseum to finish the season. But they did carry marquee wins versus Texas, Baylor, Iowa, West Virginia, and UNC North Carolina. Where do you rank this team this season if you're putting a letter grade on it or a Albany, New York 0 to 100 scale?
I'll go first because I don't know where I'm going to be sitting with this one in terms of where you guys were, because I had fun with this women's basketball season. The ending was disappointing, no doubt, and you wanted to see some of these seniors and girls that, I mean, Ioka Lee still has a choice, but, you know, realistically, oh, am I cutting out? Oh, no.
You're back.
Okay. But, yeah, I'm back. The Ioka Lee might not be back. Who knows where that sits, but it's disappointing for these girls that, you know, were supposed to be here, and they came up just a tidbit short. So for that, I'll give this a 88. I liked it. It was a fun women's basketball season, so I'm gonna go 88. The postseason wasn't there, but I had fun throughout the season. This is the most I've talked about women's college basketball, so I'm gonna give it an 88.
Oh, that's a B+. You're in this team of B+, man. I'm gonna give it a C. I'm giving it a C. I look at how strong this season started, and you can take the Ioka Lee injury and kind of put it in a vacuum or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, this team, when she came back, just it did not look like a team that was in the realm of where they were at the beginning of the season. They had some big wins, obviously, when she was out. I mean, going on the road at Baylor was a huge win. I watching that Colorado game was very frustrating, because I felt that coaching kind of let the team down a little bit, and it's not something that just popped up for the Colorado game. It's not. I just felt that some of the matchups and some of the pieces just didn't fit against some of these teams that we were playing against. And I am somebody, I think Jeff Mitty did a good job this season. I remember the Iowa game early in the season, and I said that game was the best game that Jeff Mitty coached in his time at K-State. And it was because he worked the matchups and he put together a game plan to limit Caitlin Clark and find opportunities to score while working your defense together. And the Colorado game this last game, was just so frustrating because it was doing the same thing over and over and thinking that it's going to work. Whatever that quote is. Insanity is thinking, doing the same thing every single time, at some point it's going to work. And
expecting a different result.
And expecting a different result. And, you know, throwing it in to Ioka and, you know, Colorado's got a long center. And so how are we trying to take advantage maybe of that matchup a little bit and maybe not do that? I mean, you're trying to throw it into your post player, sure, but we were doing the same thing. And you have the opposing center that's got 7 steals at the half. That's not good. And so how at the halftime break are you trying to make adjustments to try and win this game?
And who was the other team where we had problems with a similar style matchup? It was Iowa State.
Iowa State.
Audie Crooks.
Iowa
and
she State.
Did the exact same thing. And they swept us.
Yeah. Iowa State is the same kind of deal. There are some holes with this team. You know, you would like to see everybody come back. But there's some pieces on the offensive end that you have to improve on. It was very evident, especially in the Colorado game when you struggled making shots. And the turnover plague has hit both of the basketball teams. I mean, this team was ranked 2nd in the country at one point this season, right? And you get knocked out in the 2nd round of the NCAA tournament. Ultimately, I believe that a C grade is very fair in this situation because this team should have made the Sweet 16 if you think about it.
But let's not act like we can get to the Iowa State thing. And I think it does show some holes, especially offensively and defensively. Offensively, we are a little one dimensional trying to get Ioka Lee the ball, but let's not forget that she is our best player. So our offense runs through her, so it does hurt to see a team have 17 steals, but our offense is our offense. If our team is not knocking down open shots to give teams to have to space them out where we can get one-on-ones for Ioka Lee, there's going to be a lot of steals. So it does suck that we didn't adjust to that. Like you said, Matt, there's no excuse for that. And defensively, Ioka Lee and ball switches and ball screens, Iowa State took advantage of that, and they kind of ate our lunch for it. But let's not act like Colorado was some chumps, because they were ranked 3. They were ranked 3 earlier in the season as well, and they were consistently a top 15 program.
That's so another thing I was going to mention, because
they
beat LSU
kind of
in the
underseeded
first game.
Everything.
I mean, I don't disagree with you, but that's also a Colorado team that lost 6 out of their last 8 games. They're not on necessarily a great run of form recently. And this was a game at home, and Colorado won the third quarter, 19-7. We scored 7 points in the third quarter. And a lot of it is you have 5 straight possessions with a turnover. Or in the fourth quarter, Colorado misses 6 shots in a row.
You had multiple gap goats in the fourth quarter. You held them scoreless for 6 straight minutes.
And you can't find a play that you can execute effectively to get points. And some of it, yes. I mean, Colorado's a good team. I mean, Colorado, yes, they were a good team, but this isn't a team that's like a world beater. I just felt that for as much as we've seen Ioka Lee done a really great, she's such a dynamic player in the post for us. You have to also put together situations where you can get your offensive players opportunities to execute to try and score points. When Ioka is not necessarily having a great game, or she's double covered, and you can't just trying to put her as the number one option all the time, that puts you in a situation where you're going to turn the ball over so much. So I just felt the Colorado game lacked some of the pieces from maybe a coaching perspective that, where we needed it. So you can look at the highest of highs in the season, but you have to look at the lowest of lows too. I mean, this is a team that throughout the season played at a Sweet 16 type level. And I just felt that this last game did not necessarily match how good this team was through the season.
That's fair. Maybe I'm a little high on an 88. Maybe I should be closer to like a B level, B minus level. The postseason disappointing, but I'm trying to think. The hype started for this women's team, what, 2 years ago with the NC State? Was it an NC State win in the postseason? And Ioka Lee went out last year. Then you have this year where you're off to the hot start. I think the just the fun kind of overwhelmed me, where I was to the point where I was like, you know, this is just fun watching women's basketball instead of it being a, you know, a chore. And it really wasn't for me this year. It was disappointing, but it wasn't a chore.
Well, and didn't they make the semifinals of the NIT last year as well? And they played Deb Patterson's Washington State is where she's at right now.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I had a really good conversation with somebody today about women's basketball. And I mean, I think for everybody who's listening to this, our women's basketball team this season was very, very good. And they did a great job of representing a sport that, I mean, I think it's fair to say historically is kind of an underrepresented sport from a fandom perspective. Caitlin Clark has kind of been this like transcendent player in college basketball that has put women's basketball on the map. And you think of a game last night they played against West Virginia.
Great game, by the way.
A great game, despite however you feel about the refereeing situation in that game. But there were 4.5 million people that watched that game last night. And it outdrew a good significant number of NCAA men's tournament games. Caitlin Clark has kind of provided this like image of what women's basketball can be. And truthfully, like I watch women's basketball, it is a sport where the skill of these players, I feel like, almost hits an unmatched status. Like, these women are so good shooting the basketball. And, you know, for us, if we're fortunate enough, and let's say Ioka Lee comes back for last season, and you are able to keep some of these key players from transferring, etc. I think the big miss here, and somebody, you know, something you have to bring in is, who is the shooter? Who's going to be a woman that's coming in on this team is going to be a shooter? I just feel like we struggle with shooting. You know, Serena Sundell shows flashes, which, I mean, she's, I think, very underrated player in this team. Like, she does a great job with that. But I do watch some of these other teams in the women's NCAA tournament, and I feel like we don't necessarily meet the match if we're in a shooting contest against somebody else that we're going to be able to win. So I do wonder how Jeff Mitty is going to construct this team in 2024, depending on who he has, so that potentially this team can come back and be in the running to maybe win the Big 12.
I agree. I think you agree. You bring up great points across the board. If I'm grading on the same scale as the men's team, I would give the women's team like a B minus because they were on the right side of the bubble. They won a game in March in the NCAA tournament. They hosted, so they had a great seed line. And unfortunately, it just didn't come to fruition. They got a draw against Colorado, who I agree with Chef, I don't think is a very bad team. I think they're a great team, and they beat LSU in the first game of the season, and they lost six of their last eight, whatever it might have been. But every team can go through a slump and then turn it on in March as soon as they get to tournament time. So I think this is a team that can and maybe could, like, they could very well give Iowa a run for their money in this next round. They could very well make the Final Four, and if they make the Final Four, I think they're in the Natty.
They're beating Iowa.
Colorado's pretty good.
They're beating Iowa. Good. Chalk it up. They're beating Iowa. I bet you. I bet they you could. A dollar.
They very well could.
I don't think they're a good matchup for Iowa, but I mean, I think LSU.
Iowa doesn't have the inside presence. That's the one. I mean, if you could get somebody on Caitlin Clark to get her frustrated, which, no offense, is not hard to do, and you have that gal for actually both of the, well, the one girl that hit her head on the floor, she wasn't very good, but the other girl that was giving Ioka Lee nightmares, she is a dog. She got that dog in her. And Miller, the other Miller, the one with the shape, my God, she was cooking Gabby Gregory. So, I mean, I don't think Iowa has the horses for that. Caitlin Clark needs to put up like 45 to, I think she's going to have to put up like 40 to beat this
Colorado. What do we know, though, about when Caitlin Clark scores like 40 plus? They usually lose those games.
I don't think Colorado is a good matchup for Iowa, yeah. But I will be interested to see in the Elite Eight if they play LSU, how that turns out.
Yeah.
I think LSU is kind of the tough one, but who knows?
But yeah, I think B minus disappointing. I think there are a lot of parallels to the football team in a lot of ways. Like, you had a lot of hype coming into the season. You're returning a lot of players coming into the season. And you know that this team has the capability because of the wins that they have, because of the personnel that they have on the roster, they have the capability to go to the Final Four. They have the capability to make the college football playoff potentially on the football team if a couple bounces go the right way. And it just didn't pan out that way. It sucks. And it might be coaching. You can chalk it up to coaching. You can chalk it up to injuries, whatever it might be. But it just kind of sucks. It's not a bad season. It's a good season. It's not a great season, but it's not a bad season. So that's kind of where I end up landing with it. So with that, thank you all for listening to the show. For all of us here at Cocaine Willie, give us, you know, do us a favor. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, give us a rating. 5 stars. 5 stars is great. Follow the show. Subscribe if you're on YouTube. Give us a like on the video and subscribe to the channel, even if you're not a K-State fan. You can follow the show on Twitter or Instagram or TikTok or follow us individually. I'm at Bob Trollsby. Fireball Matt is at Matt Marchesini. And Chef is at Chef Andre Napier. Chef.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug, baby.
We are all coke and no joke, Wildcat Country. Let's ride.
Let's fucking ride.
Yeah, that's too slow.